Meet Will and Tom, two seemingly ordinary men, cursed with a gift of vast knowledge that is forever expanding. Possessing incredible insight with unparalleled skills and expertise, let us join them as they embark on a journey to quench their thirst for the truth while answering the questions to life's most intriguing mysteries. Let us open our minds and ask, dude, could you imagine? Could you imagine? Could you imagine?
Butterfly in the sky, I can go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book.
Dude, could you imagine?
I can go anywhere. Friends to know and ways to grow.
Dude, could you imagine? Dude, could you imagine? Dude, could you imagine? Dude, could you imagine? Dude, could you imagine?
Welcome back, everybody. This is Tom Case.
And this is William Stark.
William.
Yes.
I think this one is a question that you may excel at because you already do this anyway.
Okay.
So.
Go on.
So, the question is, what if you had the chance to write a best-selling novel?
I do not already do that. What?
Well, you write a lot. You write stories.
I write D&D campaigns.
Yeah. And in theory, you could write a novel.
I would like to one day.
Yeah.
Very much so.
That's what I'm saying. I think you have advantage in this.
It's just when you're like, oh, well, you already do this. If you could sell best-selling novels, yeah, what the fuck are you talking about?
So, Will, how long has your best-selling novel been in the top 10 list? But if you could, what would it be? Like, would it be a romance, mystery, or factual historical account? The parameters on this is that you are given the means to write a best-selling novel, and you can choose any genre. So it's almost like
the idea here is like I'm trying to write the thing I think has the best chance of being a
bestseller. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
But also it's kind of like that last one of the episodes where we talked about. What was it? I think you could the passion project.
Passion project.
So it's like, it'll probably be a cross between the passion project one and the Academy Award winning film.
Yeah.
So you're giving any resource, whatever it is that you may need
to get a book written and published.
Yeah, to get a book written and published.
Okay. Question. It's a kind of important. Well, it doesn't make that much of a difference, but it's an important question. Mm-hmm. Can I make a graphic novel instead of a actual like regular novel? It's still a book.
Yeah. It's still a novel. I mean, graphic novel, right?
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, you could do that as well. Uh-huh. But like still, you know, we want you to give more than like.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. I just wanted to see if that was.
That would have been funny if you're like.
I read a graphic novel.
Yeah, the type of novel is graphic. that's it.
So, excuse me. Did you want me, I take it you want me to go first. I feel like you want me to go first.
Yes, but you know what? Let's do a quick deep dive.
All right,
here.
Let's do it.
You know, I feel like, Fritz probably is out writing his own novel, so that's why he's not here, but let's go to the deep dive, shall we?
Sure.
Details from the deep.
So some of the things I just looked up, I just wanted to look on certain things about like writing and just in general, authors and stuff like that. The earliest writing is can you guess how old the earliest writing is, Will?
Is writing or the earliest like story? Those are two different things.
It says the earliest writing.
Would it be that cave in France? I can't remember what it's called. It's a cave in France that they found that dates back to like 50 or 60,000 years ago. But I don't know if it had writing. I know it had pictures of animals and I know it had handprints and stuff.
I don't think that's what they're...
So go ahead.
So on this one it says the earliest writing is 5,500 years old. While humans have drawn symbols and images since the Stone Age, the first true writing is generally believed to be Sumerian.
Oh, so the Epic of Gilgamesh.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's what I was going to say. The oldest story that we have is the Epic of Gilgamesh, and it's a fucking good story. I really like that story.
Yeah,
it's better than even most Greek mythology. It's so good. Oh, really? Oh, I love the Epic of Gilgamesh. It's great.
Sozo was developed around 3500 BCE from pictographs, and the cuneiform writing system was initially used to record business transactions, including several complaints and demands for refunds. I guess it's not something's there. Never change.
Some things never change.
Before expanding to include what we would recognize today as literature, the most important early work written in cuneiform, C-U-N-E-I-F-O-R-M.
That seems right.
Is the Epic of Gilgamesh, right? Mm-hmm. That's what you just said. The oldest written epic in the world. The Gilgamesh epic was created by compiling earlier, shorter poems together to make a book-length story about a hero's quest for immortality.
Yeah, that book is about struggling with one's own mortality. So Gilgamesh is a king. He's a demigod king, kind of like Hercules. And he's a complete asshole piece of shit. And he abuses his people. And he's just terrible. He's horrible. And I think the gods end up creating an equal to him in power named Enkidu. But the thing about Enkidu is he's like a beast man. He's like uncultured. He lives in the wild. He does not know how to be a person. And I forget the details of like who sends the harlot out. But so in ancient Sumeria, the harlots were the priestesses of, I want to say Ishtar. And they were very well received in their communities. Like they were technically prostitutes, but they were like a religious prostitute that like people would see when they became of age. It was like a rite of passage. It wasn't like a frowned upon thing. But they send the harlot out to meet Enkidu and teach him how to be a man, right?
Oh, okay.
Teach him how to be a person, teach him how to be civilized and put on some fuck clothes. And I mean, he still stays like a beastly dude, but
he's just in beast mode all the time.
Yeah. So once he is civilized, I'm flubbing the details, but he ends up going to the city. I can't remember the name of the city. It was similar to Ur, but obviously it wasn't Ur. That's a biblical city. And immediately him and Gilgamesh, when they meet, it's immediate like duke it the fuck out.
Oh,
and,
really?
Yes. And it's just, I think part of it was like that's part of Enkidu's purpose in life was to challenge Gilgamesh. Mm-hmm. So I think that he's got that going for him. And with Gilgamesh, it's like he's never seen somebody or met somebody who was a threat before. So he immediately it goes into attack mode. And these two trash the city.
So this is like the ultimate WWE SmackDown.
Yeah, this is like I'm trying to think of an equivalent here. This is like I guess Thor and Hulk going at it.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's a little extreme. Yeah, they're not that powerful. Yeah. But in these dudes, they just tear up the city and neither of them win.
Yeah.
But eventually,
this was like the Hulk, Hulk Hogan and The Rock.
Sure. Yeah. Neither of them can beat the other. They're both equal. And instead of killing each other, they end up stopping and they become best friends.
Oh, yes, okay.
They become friends.
Gilgamesh, so they become bros now.
They become super bros, dude. Like super bros. God, like the original bromance. Enkidu and Gilgamesh. I'm not exaggerating. Like these two love each other by the end of... Well, I'm going to stop now because I'm just telling the whole story.
No, but that's interesting.
The story continues with them going on some escapades and stuff. And then they go on like a really big adventure. And I'm not going to get into spoilers because it's a really cool story.
That is awesome. I didn't know any of that.
Yeah, that's cool. It's a super fucking cool story.
No, that is awesome. No, I'm glad you shared that. Yeah. I don't know how many of our other listeners may have known that. I didn't know that though. So there's an author, Agatha Christie.
I'm familiar.
Agatha Christie couldn't actually write easily. Agatha Christie was one of the world's most famous writers, and her mystery novels are some of the most famous in the world. Mm-hmm. However, she suffered from a condition called dysgraphia, which makes it difficult for a person to write. So Christie dictated her novels to another person.
Whoa.
This also had the benefit of making them more conversational and thus more popular with her readers.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
There's a relatability to it. That's interesting.
Yeah. And I do agree with what like they were saying at the end there. Like, obviously, if you have two people there going over it, you know what I mean? Like, it'll probably come out better.
That's interesting.
John Steinbeck used up to 60 pencils per day. In the days before computers, it wasn't uncommon for authors to write their books by hand. John Steinbeck could use up to 60 pencils per day when writing, and reportedly used 300 pencils to complete his masterpiece, East of Eden. Each pencil could write up to 35 miles now, of writing.
I have not read East of Eden, mm-hmm. but the few Steinbeck books that I am familiar with are not that long. They're like 200, 300 pages. Like, what the hell are you using 60 pencils a day for?
He probably writes very harshly.
Yeah, you know what I mean? That, or just a lot of it got scrapped and rewritten.
Yeah, like, or maybe it might have been due to the quality of the pencil.
You know what I mean? What if the pencil only gets through a page before it's just done?
Like, I mean, just get him the cheap pack.
Yeah, because you know what I mean? He goes through them. He goes through them like water. Yeah, exactly. That's interesting. Okay.
Here's something about you, William, and you know, possibly me.
Okay.
Creative writers don't have a dominant brain hemisphere.
Okay.
It's often said that the left hemisphere of the brain controls analytical and reasoning skills, while the right hemisphere controls artistic and creative thought. Because of this, many believe that creative writers are right brain dominant. However, studies have found that this isn't the case and that many creative writers actually don't have a dominant hemisphere, but are more or less equally balanced between the two.
Well, my question is that unusual?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Like, is this a non-fact?
Yeah. Indeed, there is... I like how they use indeed. You use indeed.
I do.
There is very little evidence that there are truly dominant brain hemispheres at all.
See?
Since both sides of the brain are always working together.
I smelled bullshit. I knew it. Yeah.
I'm going to write to the person that runs this website here. Creative writing is similar to professional athletics.
Go on.
Bullshit. a German researcher, Martin Lotz, studied the brains of both professional athletes and professional writers and found that their brain activity was very similar during athletic competition and the writing process. Interestingly, Lotz found that professional writers and amateur writers had a key difference. Professional writers use their speech processing center of the brain to develop their stories, while amateur writers relied on their vision centers to imagine the story first. Oh, when you create any of your stories, how do you feel? Like, do you kind of envision it first, like in your head? Or?
No, not especially. I mean, it depends. Like, so when I'm coming up with a concept, I might be a little bit more visual. But when I'm actually sitting down to write, for me, it's more along the lines of like, what words can I use to evoke the imagery I want? I'm a big fan of prose that is fairly flowery, but not too flowery, but something that really like, how do I say it? It's something that almost like is, and the way that food makes you salivate. The words should make one's mind salivate at the scene that's unfolding.
Oh, yeah. I gotcha. Yeah.
Not to say I'm any good at that. I'm okay here and there. But there are writers who are just exquisite, and they're my favorite writers.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
I have this last one, too, that I also want to ask you how you feel if this is you or not.
Okay.
Introverts make the best writers. There is a stereotype.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
There is a stereotype that writers are lonely, maladjusted introverts who don't enjoy interacting with other people.
See, that's the thing is I'm just curmudgeonly. I'm not lonely. I'm fine. Leave me the fuck alone.
Yeah, that is true. You aren't lonely. No. Like that is true.
And yeah, I have my circle of people. Everyone else leave me alone.
Yeah, and that's true too. It's not that like you don't enjoy interacting with anybody, but you have like your own circle.
Yeah.
I think
what that is actually attaching or catching on to without it meaning to is I think people who have emotional distress, people who deal with pain, deal with trauma and stuff, a lot of times that is a great resource for inspirational art because obviously pain is something we all relate to. And when something is so... deeply felt and understood, like it needs to, a lot of times it needs to be expressed.
Yeah,
and that's it can be true. Very, very cathartic for the person making it and also, I guess, for the person consuming it.
Yeah, they have the same type of like, you know, stereotype for like stand-up comedians.
Or musicians.
And musicians too. Mm-hmm. They're always like dark and tortured mm-hmm. or depressed and had a, you know, horrible background or whatever.
It's very common.
But this one says, while this stereotype isn't completely true, studies have found that introverts are more creative and thus better creative writers. One of the reasons for this is likely that introversion gives someone more time to think alone, and thinking alone helps to spark creativity.
Yeah, I think that tracks.
Can anybody hear me? Please hear me. Can you hear me? Can anybody hear me? If you can hear me, this is Fritz Frivolous. I need your help. I'm stuck. Somehow stuck inside the minds of Will and Tom. I need to escape. Please, please support them and their podcast. You can go to patreon.com/dudecouldyouimagine or leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Distract them long enough for me to break free. You can even leave a like, comment, or subscribe. Again, don't forget about me, Fritz Frivolous.
Yeah. But I do kind of agree that there are certain points in there that I do see in you, but like,
well, not thank you. I mean, I appreciate it.
Yeah, but not every one of these. Like, these ones made it sound like you're like all maladjusted and lonely, and you're kind of like emo or something. No, you're not like that.
Yeah,
like,
but not I mean, even close. Like, I mean, I think 90% of teenagers are like that, though.
Well, yeah, but that's like a phase.
We're talking about
just in general, like for someone who's a creative.
But
writer.
I also think that that's where people have a tendency to find their creative selves is in those years.
Yeah, I think that's where if you're going to become creative in the future, you mm-hmm. need to start exploring there. I think that's when the start of it usually
is. And yeah, I think a lot of times that's just what people who are creative naturally do start to really explore it. Yeah. But okay, let's get back to the question, which mm-hmm. is a book, if I'm trying to write a bestseller. So funnily enough, me and my sister once started a what was supposed to be a novel.
Oh, that's right. You actually told me about that.
I did 90% of the labor because it's hard to pin her down to get anything done. But I ended up envisioning, even though I wrote like a chapter and a half, I really ended up envisioning it more as a graphic novel.
Oh, okay.
And very anime inspired, of course. But essentially, the premise of this series was that it was going to take place in our world, but in a post-apocalyptic world, as if the apocalypse that happened, let's say, a little less than 100 years from now. So let's say a little less from 100 years from now, when the corporations run everything and technology is super fucked up and yada yada yada. Then the apocalypse happens. Yeah. That was like the premise of like when I wanted the apocalypse to happen. Afterwards, you know, we got Desert Wasteland, almost Mad Max style, et cetera, et cetera. But in this world, it's like 300 or 400 years later, right? And it was going to be kind of an odd mix between like a spaghetti western and a little bit of like heist movie stuff.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But essentially, it takes place in this vast desert-like region, and it follows two characters, a brother and sister bounty hunter duo. And I, again, this is very anime-inspired and this is really why I want a lean graphic novel. I did have this idea of all main characters in the book having names that related to music. Just because music's always been a love of mine. And so like the main two characters' names were Lyric and Viola.
That's cool.
Yeah, and Lyric was the like the front man of the duo, the gunslinger, and the hothead and yada yada yada. While Viola, well, no, Viola's really the hothead. Let's be real here. She was very hotheaded when I was writing her. But she was more like the backup intel medic person.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, I had this opening scene where like there's like this rundown saloon, right? And like I was kind of doing this write up from like one of the waitresses' point of view and seeing like how scummy and terrible this place is and these people, and then this weird dude who like looks like he's like got a limp and he's an eye patch and he's super disheveled and he looks like he could be somewhere between his 50s and 60s. He's hunched over, he's got a guitar case on his back, comes up. And he's like this really weird dude, but he's got like a certain like kind charm to him or whatever. And so he's at the bar, and then there's these rough gangsters that have been just running the town, and they're at the table playing like poker or some other card game. And there's some slip of a girl who's there playing right alongside them. And like the waitress is like, this girl's crazy. She's going to get herself in trouble, blah, 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 blah. But I wanted things to play out in such a way where the girl ends up upsetting the gangsters because she keeps winning and ends up she's cheating. and it starts a brawl, and then the old man, who's not actually an old man, ends up having to get involved, and this huge gunfight breaks out. And basically what had happened, or what the end of the scene is, Lyric is the old man in disguise, Viola is the slip of a girl in disguise, and she's there trying to find their mark, but she got too in over her head with the gambling and drinking and upset all these gangsters. And Lyric's like, which one of these is the guy? And she's like, none of these guys is the guy. And then the guy who's actually the guy is like a cold-blooded serial killer in the corner. He starts shooting it up, and like it just turns into this huge shootout.
Yeah.
And everything was supposed to be from the point of view of the waitress who's now hiding behind the bar, and she's overseeing this. And like, I wanted there to be like really almost Marvel Cinematic Universe-esque banteriness going on between Viola and Lyric. And so I had this concept for this world where like there are certain like there's no magic, right? This is not fantasy. There is technology that's advanced, but it's like it's really old, right? So like some people are able to kind of like bring it back to life, and like so there will be some things like androids or robots that are really rare. I'm thinking almost like a steampunk or diesel punk feel.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
But there are remnants of old biological experiments, right? So there's going to be radioactive monsters and shit. But there's also going to be people who are remnants from old experiments to try and create psychic warriors and stuff during the war that caused the apocalypse. I didn't have good names for these things, so I just had filler names. Like I was just calling those people psychs, right? And there's some psychs had different powers. Some were telekinetic, some were telepathic, some were pyrotechnic. Like I had like a few categories, right? But then I had this other biological type of person that basically they had a mutant gene in them that was based off of like a fungus that actually grew on the cerebral, on the spine and the brain and stuff.
Oh, okay.
But it caused certain chemical reactions in your body. And it was always different for anybody who was infected with this thing. It would cause like quote unquote superpowers, but very mild compared to like the MCU. Like someone who had this, I think I was the filler name for this was like ascendancy. So if someone had this ascendancy, their ascendancy might be that they're really strong. Like not Captain America strong, but stronger than any person should be. Yeah. And some people had like quick reflexes and I had a bunch of different, like some people didn't age, you know, stuff like that. But two things, this power, this, the mutation, the more you used it, the faster the fungus grew, and the fungus, it's an infection on the brain and it will kill you eventually,
but before it
kills you, it will drive you insane. And so people who are ascendants are very much shunned by society because they have such a bad reputation for fucking like going ballistic on people and killing people.
That's a really good twist to what you just said right now, because now all of a sudden I'm like, oh my God. So even if you've had these powers, you got to watch out if you're going to
use it. Exactly. So in this, Lyric, the brother of the two, is an ascendant. Viola, spoiler alert, she is one too, but you won't know that yet until much later in the story, because she,
well, now her, I can't read your
hers
book,
hasn't Will. Been awakened yet. So anyways, but his basically gives him hyper focus and reflexes, right? So when he kind of like zones in with this ability, he basically his focus is top notch. He's got he's an amazing shot. He's got fast reflexes. He's not stronger, but he's like hyper focused. It's like adrenaline got shot into his veins.
Like bullet time almost. Like
exactly.
I'm actually currently playing a game, Red Dead Redemption 2, where you can kind of do the same thing. It's like hyper focused.
Right.
That is awesome.
But the thing is, he doesn't like to use his powers for obvious reasons. But another thing about this bacteria or fungus that I never named is, remember, it grows on your nerves and on your brain, including your eyes. And this,
oh really?
Well, behind your eyes, the retinas and stuff. And the thing is, it is bioluminescent. And so you use it, the more it grows, the more it glows. And your eyes, if they shine, people can recognize what you are.
Oh, so people would know you could hide it really.
And so this series deals with stuff like being, what's the word I'm looking for? Like ostracized and being always an outsider and stuff. And my idea here was that Lyric and Viola are very young. I'd say Lyric is probably around like 20, 19, and Viola is probably around like 17.
Mm-hmm.
And I basically wanted to like start off with almost like an adventure of the week kind of thing, but slowly in the background start having like an overarching story that they get involved in.
Yeah.
And it just turns into what ends up being kind of more like an epic adventure.
Man, that's so cool.
So yeah, that's what I would write, Tom. I've actually considered turning this into a D&D setting.
That would be cool.
We might run a podcast in the far future. We'll see.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what I would do.
So now I'm regretting letting you go first because you actually had like a somewhat partially written novel.
Is that story. Really? I had a concept.
Yeah. But like it was already there. I have absolutely nothing. But
you're hilarious.
But so mine's gonna be real quick.
You're like mine would be a Thor Hulk fan fiction.
Yeah, exactly. No, I have absolutely nothing. I don't have anything already written. Since I'm heavily influenced by like Greek mythology, sure. Right?
Yeah.
When I was a kid, like I would write these little short stories, and they would all kind of be the same thing. They were about one character who was seemingly normal, and then got thrust into becoming a hero, right?
So Percy Jackson, the Olympian?
Almost, right? Yeah, almost, right? And like every time I would write these things, I think mine would be a graphic novel too. Like it could be a graphic novel.
Get off my style. Yeah. I'm kidding. I'm joking.
But in all honesty, I guess if I was really going to try it, I guess what I would most try to do is like a whole epic, like an Odyssey, right?
Oh.
So... Because
is this taking place in modern times or ancient
times? It'll probably be ancient times. Okay, just because I like that. You know what I mean? Like, but I would definitely write a whole sweeping, myth and magic type of like
gods. You know what this reminded me of? I think you watched this because I think I told you to watch this on Netflix, Blood of Zeus.
Yeah.
It starts off with a kid who he's seemingly normal, but then he gets sucked up with all the gods and adventures.
Like, yeah, and like I really would want to put my character like through the ringer. You know what I mean? Right. Like he needs to get things like thrown at him, you know what I mean? Like in the environment, just like tragedy after tragedy. And some are caused just by, natural things that happen in the environment, and some are like unfair circumstances that maybe some of the gods who are like cruel do to him.
Sure. Yeah.
And through his epic journey, he starts to learn, obviously I like the character who learns to, they start to get confidence in themselves. Sure. They start to learn what being good really is.
Sure.
All that kind of stuff. Becomes the hero, even though that's not what they ever thought they were going to be in life. And but has to go through this journey to get these magical weapons and whatnot, and finally gets his revenge.
It sounds like a really classic hero's journey.
Yeah, a classic.
I have a question. Exactly. Are you going to use the real life mythology? Or are you going to come up with your own?
No, I think I would come up with my own. That's only cool. For the fact that I wouldn't want to touch something that's. I already love Greek mythology, and I think it's good just the way it is. You know what I mean? I wouldn't want to try to change anything or add something to it.
That's interesting because I feel like it gets done a lot, and that's one of my favorite things about Greek mythology is
you
have the classic tales, but then you have great games that touch on it. You have great comics and all that other stuff.
I mean, that is true. Yeah. It's just, I mean, and honestly, dude, like I don't have anything, like I said, already written about, already written about this, but like, any of my characters, especially the gods, they're going to be modeled after.
They're going to follow certain archetypes, probably.
Greek mythology. Yeah, you know what I mean? Okay. So they'll be very similar to them. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if I would just use the actual like Greek gods and stuff themselves. Mm-hmm. So mine's going to be short. That's basically because I don't really have other than that. I kept trying to think of something.
But you would cut your teeth on like an homage to mythology. Like a hero's journey with we're not actually using characters from any of the ancient mythoses, but we're doing an homage to those ancient mythoses.
Yeah, exactly. It would definitely be an homage. Yeah. That's a good word to do.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. That's really fucking cool.
Yeah, I'm really interested in knowing one of our listeners. Maybe you guys already have something written, or maybe you guys have an idea for a book or a novel that you would like to have written. Let us know. There might be some things that inspire William. You know what I mean?
I'm almost at a point where please don't. I have too many projects on my hands. True, but no, I do want to hear them because I'm sure they're fucking awesome.
Yeah, exactly. And dude, could you imagine?
The podcast you have just heard are the imaginings from the highly evolved minds of the extra-dimensional beings, Will and Tom.
It has been translated into a format more easily understood by the human mind. Interpret it as you will. Should you find yourself seeking more answers to life's most intriguing mysteries, you can show your support by becoming a Patreon member at patreon.com/dudecouldyouimagine. You can also leave an Apple Podcasts review. You can subscribe to us on Instagram at @dude_couldyouimagine, on Twitter at @DCYImagine, and on our YouTube channel, where you can leave a like and a comment. We can also be reached through our email, dudecouldyouimagine@gmail.com. We leave you now so that you may gather your thoughts until we meet again to ponder the meaning of the cosmos and ask, dude, could you imagine? Could you imagine? Could you imagine?
Let the caffeine flow through me.
I'm going to try to leave that in.
For sure.
I'm going to make it sound like a power.
I may be a drug addict, Tom. Yeah. And my drug is caffeine. I know.